Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. Music from The Red Pony, music of Aaron Copland, which conjures up the same feeling that one would have in the Brandywine Valley. We visited Jamie Wyeth there at the opening of the Andrew Wyeth Studio to the public, and it was really quite an experience. I'm catching my breath because we're in a breathtaking situation here. We are at the farmhouse of Andrew Wyeth painted here, and Jamie Wyeth grew up here, I guess.
And painted here,
and we are sitting here and speaking with him, and it's so very thrilling because I do remember we spoke once before about your wonderful works that you did with the Nureyev and the ballet exhibition that you had in the museum. However, what's new about this is that this is the farmhouse, and it is open to the public now, and there are so many things to see that are in. It's an insight into the motivation of the artist, I guess, and the joys and the delights that you experienced here, and maybe some things that weren't so delightful. But we're sitting in a room. Now, what room is this, Jamie?
This would have been the living room of the house. The interesting thing, Jill, is that not only was this my father's studio, but it was our home. I grew up here until around, I think I was 16, when we moved to the mill. So this building holds lots of a tsunami of memories for me.
Yeah, and also was very important. You're starting to paint as well, isn't that right?
I really had my first studio, a real studio here. My father had the further room where we're sitting is where my father worked. And so I sort of took over the big living room, which was sort of right next to his studio, and did a lot of my early paintings here.
How old were you when you started to really paint?
I lived here, but then I studied with my aunt in the N.C. Wyeth Studio, which is just up the hill from here.
Yes.
Which I think makes it interesting for visitors because they'll not only see Andrew Wyeth Studio and a bit of mine, but then my grandfather's N.C. Wyeth, which is just up the hill. So my first sort of formal training in painting was with my aunt in the NCY studio. And then at a sort of 14, 15, I started painting here.
Did you always want to paint? I mean, was this something that you just took for granted because you lived with it?
Well, the curious thing, I have a brother who ate the same bacon and eggs in the morning as I and had no interest in painting. So for some peculiar reason, the tools were all there. We literally lived in the studio, so the paint, the pencils, and the brushes. So it was very natural for me to paint.
But you had the inspiration, which is a different one than I guess your father had and the grandfather and so on. But what is this? How we're in this main room now, and I see stuff over there that's yours. Can you talk?
Well, that what they've sort of recreated there was when I was around 16 or 17, I was asked to do a posthumous portrait of President Kennedy, he having just died a few years before. And so I sat and sort of recreated a memory of him and did drawings of the two brothers and so forth. So this space in this living room in the studio is where I did the portrait and evoked all the memories of President Kennedy. And so my little space, and it's sort of funny because my father's space is in another room, and he loved to play music while he worked. And the Victrola at that point, of course, was records, in my room. So he would put Sibelius and Rachmaninoff just blaring. I had to wear cotton in my ears because I love music, but I find it intrusive when I work. He was the opposite.
It's very interesting. I have a problem with listening to music and concentrating because I'm busy listening to the music,
yes,
of course.
I agree.
And so the Sibelius, that's very interesting as well, because the whole feeling here, Sibelius was terribly inspired by the nature around him. And that's what you feel in this beautiful abode. I mean, there's so much in here, the personality of Andrew and his likes and dislikes. And of course, he loved the movies, I think, didn't he?
Absolutely. That's an element that it will be interesting to people, I think, that movies were very important to him. He saw a film with his father when he was 8 or 9 years old called The Big Parade, a silent movie.
Yes.
And it lingered throughout his life. He had a print of it. He watched it over 200 times. Now, that's more than just liking a movie. I watched it, I think, 25 times, and right here in the studio. And if you follow through his work and the years of his painting, the images of that film are all through his work. So it brings Andrew Wyeth right up to the 21st century.
The texture that you get in the older films, I think that might have influenced him as well. You feel that also in his studio there. I mean, we're kind of walking around the farmhouse, and in his studio, the unfinished aging of the room. I mean, it's peeling and it's gray, and the plaster is showing, and there's age. And evidently, this was inspiring to him as well.
Oh, I think, and particularly to young people, to go to the spaces where, let's say, books were written,
yes,
paintings were painted, I think fills you with amazing sort of resonance. You realize within those four walls, those worlds were created.
And also, when you come into this place, and it's a very special place, you see the real story. I mean, you see what inspired the artist, which is very, very important. And it's real. There's nothing that isn't real around here. I mean, this is everything today is very plastic and contrived. This is where it continued, I guess one would say. He was also a collector, wasn't he, of odd things?
Yes, eclectic.
Very odd. I mean, I see some costumes as well.
Costumes,
know?
Toy soldiers, paintings by Howard Pyle. He was very eclectic. And it's rather interesting, I think, for people to go to the NCY studio and compare it with the Andrew Wyeth studio. NCY studio is full of the costumes of Treasure Island, the guns and the swords and so forth. My father's studio was rather spare, if you look at it. There's not much, sort of, there were a few things around. And I think another element that I think people would be interested in, a lot of the copyists of Andrew Wyeth feel that, you know, he was photographic and his painting started at one side of the canvas and worked across. He was a wild man painting. He threw paint. The drawings were on the floor. He stepped on them. A lot of his work was completely out of control, and I think the studio needs to be a little more dirtied up to the way it really
Yeah, well, I think
work.
Generally speaking, I think artists, I mean, any kind of an artist, a musician or a painter or a writer as well. I just saw Hemingway, the way he used to stand up and type and throw the pages away. But I think what's interesting is that people really don't know what goes into the creative process. I mean, you as an artist, I'm sure, can get an impression and all of a sudden you say, gee, you know, I want to try to do something with that. And that's what you feel here, this reaching out in so many areas, things that he loved, things that I think this movie thing is rather interesting because he was fascinated. There's a projector here in this room.
Yes, we
what
would.
What is this? Is this did you watch
old,
movies here?
Yes, the old reel-to-reel projector. And inevitably, the times that I watch The Big Parade with him, this silent film, halfway through in the darkness, I'd hear, oh, damn it.
Right.
And I'd look and all this spool, all the film
gosh.
Was completely almost covering my father. His head was barely sticking through it. And so we'd have to spend the next 2 hours rewinding the film.
Well, that's poor projectionists, I guess.
Yes.
But again, this is also a look at life at a certain time. You're listening to Crossover. I'm Jill Pasternak on location speaking with Jamie Wyeth at the farmhouse where Andrew Wyeth had his studio. The studio now is being opened to the public for the first time. He has all kinds of interesting, these helmets, and also he was interested in fencing, wasn't he?
Yes, he had fencing matches here, various friends of his. He, of course, had a distinct advantage, if you know about fencing. It's all about balance. Well, my father had very long feet, and he walked rather like a duck, so it was very difficult to throw him off in a fencing match. So he loved fencing.
Well, he must have admired Errol Flynn very much.
Oh, he loved Errol Flynn. And a lot of the movies we watched were Robin Hood and Seahawk and all those great ones.
Yeah, that was of a certain era. I mean, it's kind of distilled here in time. What about all the little the soldiers and the were these handmade? Were these things he collected?
These were things he collected as a child, and then right through his whole life. They're German-made Elastalins. They're called. You know, back to the acting thing. People are interested in when you walk in. There are a couple of photographs of my father fencing with Douglas Fairbanks.
Lucky,
who is
lucky
the son
for him. Yes, Junior.
Of his great hero. Yeah. Yes, my father adored Douglas Fairbanks.
So did I. I mean, Junior. And I was very little when I saw, but he was a very handsome guy.
Yes.
Very, very, you know, sexy, really.
Absolutely.
And of a certain period. Well, Errol Flynn, too. He played the parts anyway. We still play that music on WRTI.
Oh, it's wonderful.
The Seahawk and all of that. And people love it. And There was something about the movies in those years that was, it transported you. There was not such acute realism as it is now. Now it's so real that it's scary, I think.
Yes, leaves little
to the
imagination.
It's better, yeah. But then there was that glamour. And it's so interesting to see that he was moved by that. I think that one thing you feel when you come into the farmhouse is the unique, the different aspects of a personality and what interested that personality. And I think that in itself is, what were the influences here? I mean, that's a kind of a rhetorical question, but...
Well, I think that, again, I think the people that come and visit the studio will get the sense that a lot of it was in the painter's mind. You know, there are four empty walls. A lot of these things, he didn't use photographs, my father. He conjured these things up really in his mind. And when he worked on a particular painting, as you'll see in his studio, they have the drawings of one painting that they, as if he were working on it. He surrounded himself by these drawings and studies and immersed himself into it. But no sort of visual aids, just the simple drawings that he'd done. And often the drawings were just one line on a page, and that would be very important to he as a painter, or even when I work, one little corner of an edge that I'd drawn means something to me. It'd be meaningless to most people. But I think for the audience visiting this studio, it gives them a real sense of the way he worked and how he worked, and I think gives a better understanding of Andrew Wyeth.
We have two ladies here who are terribly important in this entire effort, and we are so delighted to speak with you today on Crossover. We have Virginia Logan, who is Executive Director of the Conservancy, and Christine Podmanitsky, who is Associate Curator as well. And we have a lot of things to see here, and it is rather difficult to get it all in, but can you tell us a little bit about the whole, I guess it's the layout of the entire, the farmhouse and relation to the exhibits that they have in the Conservancy.
Well, we're in a schoolhouse that was built in 1875, and then in 1925, when it was decommissioned, purchased by N.C. Wyeth, and it became a studio for his eldest daughter, Henriette, and her husband, Peter Hurd. And then later became their residence as a bedroom wing was added to the house. And then ultimately in 1940, Andrew and Betsy Wyeth moved in here as newlyweds, and the room we're sitting in was Andrew Wyeth's actual studio. And then they moved up the road in 1961, and this remained his studio.
And, of course, this is in the newly opened farmhouse, which is open, I guess, what is it, every day except Monday?
Yes, it'll be open for tours Tuesday through Sunday.
And now we have Christine. And tell us a little bit about your function here and how you are involved.
I have overseen the work of a great many number of people, both on our staff and consultants here, to... So that we can interpret the studio to the public. We have it's a building with many, many layers, and so we have decided which of those time periods in Andrew Wyeth's life, in the life of the building, that we want to interpret. For example, in the kitchen here, we're interpreting the time 1940 to 1961 when the Wyeth family lived here as a family, when Andy painted here as well. And then with the little corner in the living room that shows Jamie Wyeth's work, we interpret that to sometime between 1961 and 1968 when Jamie worked there. And then the studio here is a sort of general, the studio that we're sitting in here is sort of a general interpretation of how the room looked when Andy painted here. He did all of his major Pennsylvania temperas in this room and many of his watercolors as well.
When was the decision made to open this to the public?
Right, when it was given to us by Mrs. Andrew Wyeth, it was, we knew that we would open it to the public eventually.
And so once again, this is, you put it together in a way that it would appear that the family was living here and things were going on. That's the appearance that you get when you walk into the farmhouse. It's really quite warm and alive. And just an insight, again, into the artist at work and the family living as well. And you are so terribly important to the whole survival of everything, the conservancy and of all the new projects that you're working on. And I think this is an amazing insight, as I said, into the life and the work of Andrew Wyeth and, again, his family.
The combination for visitors to be able to come and experience this wonderful building where Andrew Wyeth worked and lived, and then go over to the Brandywine River Museum and see many of the works that he painted here is quite powerful.
And unique as well.
And unique among museums. And visitors who have come in on previews have had really strong reactions. Some have been quite moved.
Christine, can you tell us a little bit about the studio that we're sitting in right now?
This is a remarkable opportunity, I think, for people who go to a museum. They stand in front of a painting. Many of them don't really understand, have never visited an artist studio before, and I think the museum has this remarkable opportunity now to show people an artist studio. And particularly when you come into Andrew Wyeth's studio, you can see the process. You can see what he was going through to create some of his temperas. We're showing on the easel here a reproduction of a tempera called Raccoon. But around the painting, you have many, many studies that the artist did, reproductions again, but many studies that the artist did for this one particular painting. And you have the opportunity to look at them. Some are hanging on the wall. Some are thrown in a very cavalier, casual manner on the floor, which is, by all accounts, the way Andy did it. But the drawings are very remarkable. Some of them are very, very detailed, very, very fine details, for example, of the dogs in the painting, while others are much looser, much freer watercolor sketches. So you have an idea of the process. And I think that people perhaps standing in front of a painting at a museum don't see this. They just don't understand what goes into making a picture.
Yes. That's a terribly important thing. It's the artist at work, basically, and the progression of creativity. And that is a story for another time, but it is really quite an experience just to sit here and look around and feel like you're there while work is in progress. Virginia, you said you had some other interesting plans about extending this. I guess we would call it a kind of an exhibit, wouldn't you? You said something about interviews that you have had with various people.
One of the delightful things about sharing this wonderful studio space with some of our visitors in previews is that some of Andrew Wyeth's models and many other people who had known him or worked with him have come in and told us their stories, whether it was the gentleman who made frames for him or some of the people who sat in this very room while he was working on major paintings of them. And that has prompted us to launch an oral history project where we are gathering the insights and reflections of a number of these people as part of a database of material that we're going to use for some of our research going forward. Many wonderful plans, the insights that you gain from visiting the studio and visiting the Brandywine River Museum and seeing his works that were painted here is incomparable. And it's very exciting that just the number of ideas for us to build on and explore to present to our guests going forward is thrilling.
Well, it's constantly expanding and offering an insight to the public that one would never have, generally speaking. So again, it's a pleasure to be here. Very exciting and so much to say. And we hope that we can prevail upon you once again when the oral history is put together and all the other things that you have planned.
We would love to do that. It is just such a joy to be able to share this with people, and we're eager to have people come and experience this firsthand.
Thank you so, so much. You're listening to Crossover. I'm Jill Pasternak on location, speaking with Jamie Wyeth. Just a word about you. What are you doing these days in terms of your ideas?
Well, I'm very boring because all I do is paint. And I actually just returned from something very unusual for me. I went to China, and there was an exhibition opening of my father's work the first time, and it amazed me how. What influence his work had on the Chinese after the Cultural Revolution.
Really? Not the other way around?
All these present-day painters, Zheng Fanzhi, the leading painter in China, he said he wouldn't be a painter today were it not for Andrew Wyeth. And so the reason I went to China was really to meet these painters, and I gave a speech at the Central Academy in Beijing, and it was mobbed with people. And after the speech, they poured towards me carrying early catalogs of the Pennsylvania Academy, the Philadelphia Museum,
goodness.
That they'd had for 30 or 50 years, all tattered. So it wasn't just lip service. I mean, the Wyeth family is very well known in China, which amazed me.
And what would you say were the influences?
Well, I think
was it an Americana thing?
Well, no. When they came out of the Cultural Revolution, they had painted sort of Soviet social realism, mm-hmm. and they didn't want to continue doing that. Women manning the barricades,
right.
And that's when they discovered Andrew Wyeth from little photographs and magazines people would bring into China, and they realized that they could still paint in the classical sense, but paint their own life and their own love, not some social, political agenda. So that's what opened. That's what they told me, that it opened them. They realized they could continue painting.
But also stylistically?
Representational, but not with a political motive. Just to paint their lives. And if you look at the Chinese painters today, this particular painter, his paintings sell for $10 million a piece. His paintings are of the people of China. What he loves and knows, and he said he learned that from Andrew Wyeth.
Isn't that exciting? Well, I guess, you know, art is the universal language. As I said, it's music and it's painting and words, I guess, as long as you translate them, you know. But it is it's a special to live in that environment, to grow up and to be part of it is really a gift as well. I mean, you're very lucky that you have the talent as well.
Well, exactly. But it also requires a lot of work. And if anything, living in this house, this studio with my father, imbued a sense of me that you painting is not something you go to the office and do. You do it 24
of
hours
course.
A day.
Yes. So now we have here the entire house. It's this large room. And then we have your father's studio, and there's a corner here that's yours. I mean, I would love to know what you did in that corner here.
I did it. Several paintings, early paintings of mine, Draft Age, a painting I did of a friend of mine and who was about to be drafted into the Army. I did the portrait of President Kennedy, all of it in this little corner.
In this corner, and you put your own barricades up.
I had to isolate. Because the windows, as you can see, Jill, are from all different directions. So I wanted to direct the light.
And so
it gave me, I made a little cocoon. Actually, funnily enough, I did this when I was very young. Later, when I worked with Andy Warhol in New York, he gave me a part of his studio, the factory, to work in, and I created the same thing. I put
it's really like a womb. I guess.
It's the birth of great things.
Exactly. So here we have again the main great room, which is lovely, and there's the way it's furnished is really quite beautiful, and everything is real, and it's old,
and then his library, I think, is so interesting.
Oh well, that's
in the other
fantastic.
Room has all the different books that interested him, all
and
the
film
sort of
and film.
Lots
he was
of
very
film.
Taken with film,
absolutely,
and that. So the library is rather small, but it is. It's chock full.
Teeming full of things.
Teeming
exactly.
full. And then what else is there?
And then you have the kitchen, of course, which they recreated exactly the kitchen of when I grew up, which would have been in the 50s. They even found a Frigidaire refrigerator that fit the exact spot. My brother remembered the particular refrigerator, and they have that here. So really,
wow, that's
it's like
true.
A time capsule.
Well, there are companies, I guess, that value their creations. After all, that is an artistic creation.
That's right, absolutely.
The refrigerator. And so how many rooms is it actually?
Oh, it's I would think it's probably 8 or 9 rooms.
8 or 9 rooms. And open
the bedrooms are here, of course, and Nikki and I slept upstairs. Uh-huh. My parents downstairs. It's a relatively small house, if you really think of it. And the nucleus is really my father's studio. Everything sort of revolved around that. And that was evident of our life.
Isn't that
everything
what it's,
evolved around what he was working on. And, you know, it became a total immersion. So to me, as a young painter, that was the biggest influence I could have had.
So to have this open to the public is quite a big thing. They're open, I believe, except on Mondays?
I think so, yes. It'll open, I think, this summer. And I think, you know, for a person who's interested in Andrew Wyeth's work, or even a person who probably just learned about his work, it'll give them a real insight coming, as it did to me going to Faulkner's house where he wrote so many
well
things.
When you see that where someone lived, I mean,
it can't help but imbue you with a sense of, oh, this is sort of what it's about.
Well, it's also not very daunting because you kind of walk in and say, what's going on here, all these crazy things, but they're not. I mean, it's the man and what he loved and how he expressed it artistically and as well for you. So I just think it's an amazing thing. Now the views, though, are rather, I mean, you're surrounded by trees and so on, so you don't have long vistas to look at.
No great long vistas, but in the winter, of course, without the trees. And many of his paintings were from these windows.
That's what I wanted to
and
ask
so
you about.
And so many paintings were of the building. So this building was an integral part of his life and work. Not just that it was a space where he worked, but he used it as a model many times. I mean, here we're sitting, Jill, this shrunk, they call it, or cast. He did that many times in a painting where things were stored and so forth. And then the corner cupboard appeared in many paintings. And I think, again, interesting to people, to go to the Brandywine River Museum, see the paintings. They have an exhibition up of a lot of his work about this building. And then to come here and see the things. I think they've done a great job. They haven't put too many signs around. They've left it exactly as it was.
Oh, it really feels like you walked into someone's home. I mean,
a
few more chairs, but other than that. So thank you so much, Jamie. I hope that we can see some of your work.
Well, great. I hope
you have some new things.
I don't think
up.
You'd want to visit my studio. It looks like a bomb hit it.
Well, that's good. That means you're terribly creative and you don't clean up after yourself.
Right.
But what's new? I mean, other than what you had said, you had gone to China. And are you
gone to China? I had a show last winter in Paris, in a museum in Paris, and I'm having an exhibition at the Boston Museum of Fine Arts in about 2 years from now.
Anything in the Philadelphia area coming?
Nothing. Well, the Brandywine Museum always continues to have a lot of money.
Well, a pleasure. And delight. delight to see you again.
Great to see you,
and
Jill.
Just, well, what can I say? This is quite an experience.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful being with you.
Yeah.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Hattie, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated. Thanks for listening.